Transfiguration Sunday comes around every year, whether you want it or not, and hopefully it doesn't bother you. It's one of those Sundays that I'm glad is here, because otherwise I'm not sure we'd talk about it a lot, because it's kind of peculiar. It's an odd thing, this transfiguration, with people appearing to Jesus and to the disciples in a way that is inexplicable, I think, to us, and perhaps even a little bit hard for us to believe. But I was thinking about this from the perspective of what we read in 2 Corinthians with that just little tiny bit. And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing. And that got me thinking about piercing the veil. Not pierce the veil, that's a particular band that I don't listen to a lot unless some of my kids are having a nostalgic moment and I'm forced to listen to it. Piercing the veil is something altogether different. This veil is a notion of liminal space. Liminal space is where multiple things can happen, sort of a transition space. If you've got a landing in the middle of your staircase, like we do, you go down three steps, and then you turn, and you go down the rest from the upper floor. That second landing is a liminal space. You can go up or you can go down. It's not one thing. And when I was thinking of the veil, think of liminal space, I was reminded of this idea that comes from Samhain, which is an Irish festival, one we probably won't celebrate for a few reasons. But it says that at this time of the year, the veil, the dividing line, the barrier between this world, everything we can see and touch, taste and smell, and the other world is a little thinner. And in their tradition, that means that spirits can come and all that sort of thing. And I'm not so sure about that. We'll just leave it there. That's what some people believe. The notion of a thinning veil shows up in psychology, where people talk about connecting with parts of themselves that they can't otherwise. And so all of this came together for me. And I started to think about the Transfiguration and the story of the Old Testament as moments when the veil between this world and the other is a little thinner. We have the opportunity to see through it, to see something else, because we don't know for certain, but in both of the story in Mark and in the other synoptic gospels, and the story in 2 Kings, we don't know for sure, but my feeling is that if somebody else would have been there, if Elisha would have had a servant behind him, I don't know if anyone else would have seen the chariots and horsemen of Israel taking Elijah up to heaven. I don't think somebody else who happened to be on that mountain, the picnic, and looked over in that direction, I think those people would have only seen Jesus and the two disciples, not the other two. And I say that not because it means that other people are somehow fundamentally inferior, because that's not the case at all, but rather to remind us that the other world is as real as this one. We just don't see it. And a number of people, that when, as soon as they hear that, they'll just say, well, that's ridiculous. If you can't see something, how can it be? And I say, well, prove to me Australia exists. I've never seen it. I've never been there. I've never walked on Bondi Beach. Maybe it's all made up. And that's foolish, and it's intended to be foolish. But just because we can't see a thing doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means that we haven't seen it, and maybe we never will. But then again, Elisha saw something on the day that Elijah was taken from him that changed him forever. And I realized part of that was the gift of a double portion of the spirit of Elijah, which I think would be too big for almost any normal human being. It's a good thing Elijah asked for it, because Elijah was pretty impressive already. And twice in Elijah is more than I think I'd want to be responsible for. But I think it was more than that. I think what happened with Elisha when he saw that, when he saw something fundamentally beyond what he knew, that also changed him forever. I think the disciples who went up to the mountain with Jesus, when they saw those other two people, when they saw Jesus' clothing change, so so shining bright that no laundry soap could achieve such a thing. I think that changed them forever. And the reason why I think it changed them forever is because the people I know who have had similar experiences, the experiences that I've had, have changed me forever. They didn't make me perfect, more's the pity. They didn't fix all of my problems. But my encounters, and yes, it is plural, my encounters with that which I cannot explain any other way than God set something alive within me that wasn't there before. When I first encountered God in a way that I can clearly remember was when God, as I've told you the story more than once, when God encountered me, or I encountered God, in the hallway of my house that was on fire when I was in my 20s. And that encounter with God, who told me to think carefully about what I valued the most and what I should take from the house and all of that, changed me forever. It didn't turn me into a preacher overnight, by any means. It barely turned me into a believer. Up until that point, I'd worked really, really hard at being an atheist. That is so hard. Like, anybody who can maintain that has got a force of will that I have never had. But I tried and realized that was futile. So I became an agnostic, and I said, okay, maybe there's a God, maybe not, I don't know. Yes, I'd been exposed to all of those truths growing up, and even in those very moments, even when I was trying to be an atheist, I still went to church on Sunday because then I could sing in the choir. A, keep my mother off my back, and B, sing some really interesting songs that I wouldn't be able to otherwise. But when I encountered God, and there are people who have come up with alternative explanations for what I experienced, including hallucinations and everything else, and I don't care. You can run those by me till the cows come home. I know what happened because I was there and you were not. And that's what I had an encounter with God. And that began the process where I became the person I am now and the person I am becoming. I couldn't have gone back past that. I think sometimes I went back to that. I think I sort of went up a little ways and then smacked back down to that level. But it was a new level. I never went back past that level, and I don't think I can. And then as other things happen, because I've had other experiences, not as dramatic as that, but other experiences that I can't explain any other way other than the veil thinning for me to see the reality of God on earth. To see angels. And to have people say, well, what do they look like? I said, now I understand Ezekiel. They look like angels. Well, could you draw them? No. Not just because I'm a lousy drawer. Because I can't. They're just outside of my experience. They were there. They were huge and not huge at the same time. Standing on both sides of a stage as someone led us in an Advent liturgy. I was changed again. Every time I've had an encounter with the living God in a way that is inexplicable to the rest of my experiences with pulpits and cars and dogs and people and all the other things of life, I've been changed. Changed for the better. But that veil that keeps us from seeing the reality of the spiritual world is always in front of us. And that's not a bad thing. This is how we were created to be as fallen people. I don't know what it was like for Adam and Eve before that. But as fallen people, this is what we have, with the occasional moments when we get to see past it. We don't see past it often. And I've pondered that off and on as I've thought of these experiences. And part of it is I don't think we could stand it. It's absolutely exhausting. It's this extraordinary moment. It's as exhausting as, for those of us who were able to be present when our partner gave birth to a baby, we did no work. Well, other than holding their hand, perhaps. My hand was numb for a week after that. It was worth it. That was all I did. I was exhausted. I didn't do any work. But being in the presence of something so amazing takes it out of us. And it's the same when we see through that veil, when we're at those moments of extraordinary events, whatever they might be. They're always hard on us because they're out of the ordinary. They are extraordinary. I don't know that we could survive living in that realm. I wonder if that's why some of the prophets seem so strange to us, because that is where they live, and they've been changed too, and they've almost been changed out of shape. So what do we do when we read about the transfiguration, when we read about Elisha seeing Elijah carried off to heaven in a cloud, leaving alone the Elijah not dying but going to heaven in a cloud? We come back to 2 Corinthians, at least I do. And even if our gospel is veiled, and we'll, in this case we'll use gospel not just for the words of the gospel, the words that God loves you so much that he came to be like us, but the gospel as a symbol or a stand-in for the reality of God in all of God's fullness, it's veiled for those who are perishing. Not everyone can see through the veil. The people who can't see through the veil are usually people who say the veil doesn't exist. We don't see what we don't want to see. It's a hard thing for us to have to admit. We don't see what we don't expect. The most common words out of the mouth of a motorist who's run into a motorcycle is, "I didn't see it." And they're right. They didn't, because we don't see what we don't expect. That's how magic works, you know, stage magic. That's how it works. We don't see what we're not expecting to see. That's how you can watch a video, and I strongly encourage you to do this if you never have, of college undergraduates passing a basketball back and forth really quickly, and you will not see the gorilla that walks past until you go back and watch it again. Why? We don't see what we don't expect to see. And if we refuse to admit the reality of a world more than this, it might be closed to us. Not because God doesn't care about us, not because God can't do it, but because God honors our desires almost all the time. But sometimes it happens anyway, like it did for me. In the hallway of a burning house in December of 1986. About 8:30 in the evening, if you want any more. I will never forget that moment. The details have faded very slightly, but that'll be with me forever because I got to see through the veil. When we pierce that veil, it's because it's thinned from the other side. We can't make this happen. We wish we could. At least I do. I wish I was able to insist on miracles. I'm not looking forward to, and yet I am, the day of Leslie's funeral. If I could do miracles, it wouldn't be happening. People I know and love wouldn't be sick. I can't force my way through that veil, but now and then it thins, and we get to see through. And I don't know if any of you have had that opportunity or not. If you haven't, there's nothing wrong with you. If you have, there's nothing special about you. It's a gift from God. And maybe you needed it and maybe you don't need it. It doesn't really work in those ways. It's not part of the economy of the regular human being, of transaction and owing and all of that. But what I will say is that the opportunity, when it arises, it will be unforgettable and will be life-changing. And if you're alert to the possibility, maybe even today, you'll pierce that veil and see another reality that's more real than the one we live in. And take encouragement from that and know that the God who reveals things to us is the same God who loves us. It's not something to be feared. It's a joy to experience. Amen.